This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Wong Xiaoning, and joining me from the depths of Petaling Jaya is the one and only Roshan Kanisan. It has just gone past 6 a.m., Tuesday, 10th of November, and I think all of us have kind of absorbed and looked at the budget and the elections. It was a really, really packed weekend for me. But, you know, now we have some time to kind of analyze things with a little bit more of a reflection mode. So it's going to be an interesting day nonetheless on the Morning Run. What do we have, Roshan?
Well, we're going to be taking a look at the other big news over the weekend, including some follow-up news as Donald Trump tries to go to the courtrooms to stem the election results. But also, on the back of that, we're also going to be talking about what happens next, right? Yes, Joe Biden has won the election, but there's still a big divide in America. What's going to happen next? And could this lead to more Trumpism going forward? Some interesting questions to dive into at 6 a.m. in the morning.
Yeah, I don't think Trumpism is going away. I mean, there's even noise that when it comes to the next elections in 4 years' time, whether one of the Trump family will actually be contesting as the president. I think it'll be interesting times. But nonetheless, I also be asking about COVID-19 and the impact it has on us. And whether the government should lead by example, or governments around the world should lead by example, and whether they should kind of relook at their packages also. But as always, if you want to weigh in on the conversation, you can. Please WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll have more for you in a few minutes. But first, here's Heartache Tonight by the Eagles. Don't go away. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, and that was Heartache Tonight by the Eagles. Hopefully nobody's feeling that, by the way. Good morning, this is The Morning Run, and I'm Wong Xiaoning with Roshan Kanisan. It has just gone past 6:06. But anyway, I think we've talked a lot about the US elections for sure. I mean, you can't deny it. It's choosing or picking or voting for the leader of the free world. The most probably, I think, to be honest, still today, probably the leader of the most important country, military might, economically. But, you know, they've chosen a new president. And it's very unusual because most of the time, the person in the White House gets to stay there for 8 years. And this is rather unusual because he's out of there after 4 years. And the last time that happened was with George W. Bush and President Jimmy Carter. So what, a good 20, 30 years since it has happened. But I think the hard work probably begins today because we are talking about a country that's extremely polarized. So roughly 75 million people voted for Biden, but yet 70 million people also voted for Trump. So how is Biden, president-elect, going to heal the nation? And a nation which is extremely polarized on so many levels, not helped by media and also the rhetoric of the previous President Trump. What do you think, Roshan?
I think it's going to be a helpful start that there isn't an inflammatory person in the White House. I think that would be a good start to have. But that said, it is a long road ahead, right? Because it's not going to be as you snap your fingers and things are back to normal. A lot of families have been split on this. I mean, you read this is New York Times article that we're taking a look at, and communities have been split based on their political beliefs. And it didn't help that the previous, or the current president, soon to be former, was very inflammatory in nature. So let's hope that with Biden in the office, it's that he leads by example in tone, right? That's a very good example to have. Just start with tone, and hopefully over time, it will kind of show people that, you know, it's okay to be decent and have conversations, and you don't have to mock other people. The problem was the president before this gave license to mock. He gave license to be inflammatory because of his example. And I think my bigger concern is that with Trump, what does 2024 look like, right? I mean, 2020 is barely ended. We're already talking about 2024 because Donald Trump has, I think, opened up the bridge to authoritarian leading populism, right? Populist leaders. I mean, around the world, we have them. Modi in India, Bolsonaro in Brazil, and then Erdogan in Turkey, who's been populist for so long. He's been there in charge for so long, right? How does that lead? How does that appear in America? What happens if a more competent, savvy politician takes in the roots of Donald Trump and just follows through with that?
Yeah, I mean, I think we can glean a lot from President-elect Biden's speech, right? His victory speech, where he made pains to come across as a president that is a president for all. And he made sure that he said, you know, he doesn't see the country as a division between red states and blue states. They're all American states, and that he would be a president for the United States of America. He emphasized that he's inclusive, so he highlighted African Americans, minorities, women, Asians, Latinos, that they all play a role in America. But what's interesting about this article is that when you look at the conversations they had with different individuals, right, it really shows that families, friends are very divided in terms of their views. And I wonder if we take it back home to Malaysia, is this the case here also? Because if we look at the 2018 elections, we were a pretty divided nation in terms of how we voted. It was also quite evenly split. And that conversation about how to unite a nation is something not just faced by America, but I think faced by a lot of countries across the world. So increasingly, you see governments or countries voting almost evenly across lines. Now, that's going to happen, and I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing, because you can hold on to your political views and you have the right to express them. That's the freedom of expression. But how do you communicate with each other in an objective, calm way for the better of the country rather than taking pot shots? And, you know, I'm kind of new to the world of Twitter, but I realize people can get really, really toxic and angry on social media, for example. So, I mean, how do we be adults about this? That's my question. What do you think, Roshan?
Yeah, no, I think it's important to have mature discourse. But the problem is, I think that there are a lot of people who can't have mature discourse. It's exemplified by the 74-year-old who was president, right? It's not a young thing. It's not an old thing. It's not a, it's I think, a demeanor sort of situation. Twitter sort of social media exemplifies the elements of you, right? So if you are someone who likes to mock and likes to type in all caps because you want to show that you're shouting and exemplifying some kind of point, it's going to come through. And if it sounds like I'm slightly biased towards Donald Trump, it's because I am, right? I just don't like the way he behaves in public, because as a leader, you have to be better than the rest of us. Unfortunately, that's the situation when you are a leader, right? You are no longer on the ground. Everything you do has a trickle-down effect. When you behave a certain way, millions of people suddenly get the license to be, oh, that's okay to behave. Like, I can shout when I'm in an argument. I don't have to believe other points of views. I can just keep shouting at you and saying you're wrong. I don't need evidence for my argument anymore. That's the culture that's been brewing over the last 4 years. And how long that sticks around is anyone's guess.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting to watch President-elect Biden's reign for 4 years. What kind of conversations is he going to have? What kind of leadership is he going to bring? Is he going to be more diplomatic, calmer, more conciliatory? I think these are things that we probably will have to watch out for. But let us know what you think about what we were just talking about. Send in your messages over WhatsApp at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Now for some messages, stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, and that was Rocking Down the Highway by Doobie Brothers. A rather kind of a happy song, I guess, for 6:18 in the morning. And of course, you're listening to The Morning Run with Wong Xiaoning and Roshan Karnason. Now, I think we all cannot deny that COVID-19 has had a tremendous impact on people around the world. And, you know, even in Malaysia, and I think, of course, it varies from individual to individual. Some people have felt the negative effects far more than others. The vulnerable group, of course, those in the B40s, day wage earners, those who are working in tourism, those who are, for example, in F&B, retail, really feeling the brunt of this, not helped by the fact that the CMCO has been extended to almost every state in Malaysia. And, of course, it runs till the 7th of December. So, you know, there's much less people moving around, consumption has come down, people are feeling the pinch. Maybe you're one of those lucky ones where your pay hasn't been cut, your job is secure, good for you. But that's not the case for a lot of people. And I, you know, we can really see that in terms of, you know, when you go to the shops or when you go to the malls, how much less footfall traffic there is. And my heart goes out to these people who run these shops and the workers in there, and I think, how long can this continue if they don't have this business? So I'm not surprised that there's this article in Malaysia Kini. And of course, it quotes our one and only Dr. Mahathir, who suggests that the 10% salary cut for the higher earners be distributed to those in need. He argues that he thinks that people earning high salaries in government or private sector should forego 10% of their salaries. He admits it's a sacrifice, but he doesn't think it would hurt them if there's a reasonable cutoff point, arguing that if you earn 20,000 and above, that's something you can do very easily.
Yeah, he's also talking about ministers, right, and MPs as well. And, you know, Shani, if we take a look at examples around the world, we have had, I mean, and to be fair to the government, in the initial part of the pandemic, I think in March, the ministers did take a 20% salary cut for 2 months. At that point, I think in Singapore, they took a 3-month cut for March. New Zealand did the same thing for 6 months. This was in April. And I think the best one that I see is Japan. Japan lawmakers and government officials took a 1-year pay cut for a year, 20% straight up for, I think, in solidarity with the people, a lot of people who are being affected. And I think this is a great way. It's symbolic in nature, right? Because at the end of the day, it's about leadership. It's about leaders saying, hey, listen, we know that you guys are suffering. We symbolically are going to try and help you out. And maybe this little bit that we cut, we can put into a fund to direct to certain initiatives, right? Whether it's food banks or a recovery fund. And end of the day, it's leading by example. And if the leaders do it, maybe other high income earners start looking and, hey, the leaders are doing this. Maybe we should be overtly donating more to certain organizations to support those in need. I mean, it's maybe I'm being naive and optimistic, but I mean, I'm hoping that that's the case, right? If you have leaders come outright and say, listen, we're taking a 20% salary cut off the top, and this is how we're going to distribute the funds to people who need it.
Yeah, we have seen it among certain corporates. For example, I remember in my breakfast grill with the Sapura chairman, Tan Sri, he was the first to admit that, you know, he's going to take a 50% pay cut minimum. And then after that, it would be on a declining scale, depending on your salary. And I think that's the case also in Petronas. Any sector which has been hard hit by the, of course, the COVID-19, or for them particularly, a slowdown in, or a sharp decline in oil prices. But, you know, you're right. It's all about leadership by example, right? So you've got it at the government level, and then you've got it at the corporate or GLC level. So, yes, because you want to send out the message that I feel your pain. And maybe your company actually by right isn't doing badly. It doesn't even have to be in oil and gas. It could be in a sector. Maybe it could be in a sector that's really booming from this COVID-19 because it's a, yeah, you could be like a work from home hero, right? Which we saw many in the US, for example. Amazon share price, where is it now? Microsoft share price. Look at these guys. They are making stellar earnings. Or even
the rubber glove makers.
Yeah, Kosan's results out yesterday, also a fantastic number. So yeah, you're wondering whether, you know, in these tough times, it's all about doing the right thing. I mean, on one level, of course, you can just say it's imaging, right? It's just CSR. It's just being clever about your public persona. But why not? I don't see the harm in it. But I think if you bring it back to the conversations with the MPs, you bring it back to the government departments, I think some of the MPs rejected this because they argued that they need their salaries in order to fund the community work they do in the constituents, because not everybody gets the same allowance. And this was this, you know, I was interesting point that I find out.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think this was the point I was going to bring up, right? Now, for MPs, it's a bit of a trickier situation because not all MPs get allocation, right? Yes, Pakatan Harapan did the same thing when they came into power. They didn't give opposition MPs allocation, but maybe it's time to move forward from that, especially in this time. All constituencies deserve to get an allocation and support from the government. Because now I think MPs a lot of times dip into their own salaries to fund their offices, right? That happens a lot of the times. And yes, they can earn up to, I think, 25,000-26,000 ringgit a month with allowances, with a variety of allowances. But when you compare to the MP allocations, which can go up to 3.5 million ringgit a year for government MPs, while only being 100,000 for opposition MPs, that's a big gulf there. And impacts the social work that you could do on the ground for your constituency.
Yeah, so, you know, whether everyone should be a little bit fairer out there, that's the big question. But let us know what you think about our conversation earlier. Should people take pay cuts to kind of be in solidarity with those who are suffering? WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, we have the news bulletin, and to take us there is Shooting Star by Bad Company. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. Good morning. This is Shaoning and I'm here with Roshan on The Morning Run. And that was Someday by The Strokes. It has just gone past 6:39 in the morning and it's 10th of November, Tuesday. And so far, I think we've had some rather interesting conversations with regards to the US elections, whether Biden will be a very different president, and also whether back home, whether our leaders should take a pay cut in solidarity with those who are suffering in COVID-19. And we've actually had some social media come in about this, actually on the tweets. And one of them wrote, Simon said, take it easy, Malaysia. This just projected, not certified result, US election. So apparently we will only really, really know when President-elect Biden gets into the White House in January 2021. But I think so far, all the news out there is the lawsuits that Trump has kind of pushed forward seem to be on the frivolous front. So it's unlikely that Joe Biden wouldn't be inaugurated as the US president in January next year. But meanwhile, we're looking at some other international stories. And today, ironically, is the UN World Science Day. So it's the World Science Day for Peace and Development. And it's an important day because it's where the role of science in society becomes highlighted and there is this constant need to engage the wider public in debates on emerging scientific issues. It also underlies the importance and relevance of science in our daily lives. And this is especially meaningful in the COVID-19 era, where there's been a lot of misinformation, fake news about the virus. And some good news on this vaccine front, though, is that a vaccine has been developed by Pfizer and German drug maker BioNTech, which has been found to protect most people from COVID-19.
And boy, did the stock markets get excited about this, Shaoning. I mean, I woke up this morning and out of bed, habit, I open my phone and look at the stock market, and it was green across the board. You had Disney was up like 15%, Uber, all the players who have suffered from the pandemic were up by double digits, high single digits, and the players that benefited from the pandemic, like Zoom, were down. I mean, a lot of excitement going on, but this is just to give everyone some information about this. This is a late-stage study involving tens of thousands of volunteers found that the shot prevented over 90% of symptomatic infections. And if this really results do hold up, that's about as effective as childhood vaccine for measles that currently is. And the company also reported that no safety concerns have been observed as far, I think.
Yeah, so this is definitely the most encouraging advanced news that we've had so far, although the results are still preliminary. Now, Pfizer plans to ask the Food and Drug Administration in the US for emergency authorization of the two-dose vaccine later this month. But that's only after it has collected the recommended 2 months of safety data. Now, in the US, there is this thing called the Operation Warp Speed, and it's the federal government's effort to rush a vaccine to market. Now, they've promised Pfizer $1.95 billion to deliver 100 million doses to the federal government, which will be given to Americans free of charge. Pfizer executives have said that by next year, it will have manufactured enough doses to immunize 15 to 20 million people. Pfizer's shares, of course, rose as much as 15% on the back of this news. So, of course, the big question, when is Malaysia going to have it? I mean, in my conversation with Kari Jamaluddin, he alluded on the Breakfast Grill, which you can listen to on the BFM app and on Spotify, the government at that time, you know, he was requesting 3 billion ringgit for vaccines. I think he got it in the budget. So, you know, what's going to happen on the COVAX front? Where are we in terms of getting these vaccines? And not just getting the vaccines, but having everything ready to immunize everyone, because there are going to be always transportation issues. And this vaccine, as I understand, requires very, very cold temperatures. Do we have all this in place so that everyone in Malaysia eventually will get the vaccine?
Actually, Shani, on that note, right, when we talk about these, this vaccine and Operation Warp Speed, I think on Twitter you saw Vice President Mike Pence and Donald Trump tweeting about this. I see a Bloomberg report here that's saying that Pfizer didn't actually receive any funding from Operation Warp Speed for the development and clinical trial and manufacture of the vaccine. After this is a different story. Instead, BioNTech received money from the German government. So it's interesting. It's quite funny to see how they're reacting to this on Twitter. And then you realize that actually it wasn't part of it. There's going to be a lot of, people claiming credit for this, right? But anyway, while we're talking about politics, the court cases continue. President Donald Trump is continuing to file lawsuits disputing the results of the presidential election in which he lost the Electoral College vote to Joe Biden and the popular vote, I might add. The Trump campaign has fired off lawsuits in several states like Pennsylvania, Michigan, Georgia, and Nevada, basically the four states that we were all watching till the very end.
Yeah, in Pennsylvania, Trump team persuaded the state court to allow its observers to stand closer to the vote counting, like as if it makes a difference whether you're 6 feet or 10 feet. But to Trump, probably that 4 feet is the world of difference and that can change the outcome of the elections. Who knows? But Trump and his team have claimed that their observers weren't allowed inside the vote count at all, though Trump campaign lawyers have admitted in the court they have access. Ooh, a bit of fake news there, though. So in other states, lawsuits they filed were rejected for presenting no serious evidence. The problem is that even with lawsuits, Joe Biden has won with a comfortable margin, and it would really take a lot for the results to flip to a Trump win. Hence our conversation earlier that we said that it's very likely that President-elect Joe Biden will be in the White House come Inauguration Day in January. Still, the Trump campaign is also pursuing recounts in Wisconsin and Georgia. However, historically, recounts have only resulted in vote counts by hundreds of ballots. Now, meanwhile, another country, if many people didn't realize, that had their elections was Myanmar. And Aung San Suu Kyi's National League for Democracy looks set for a resounding victory there. This is the second relatively free contest since the end of direct military rule. So on November 9, the party spokesperson estimated that the party had won more than the necessary numbers of parliamentary seats in both the upper and lower houses, which would give the party the majority necessary to form the next government. So we have another leader who has been elected. But let us know what you think about our stories earlier on. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, we'll take a look at the front pages of our daily newspapers and online portals. We'll be back after these messages. Now, don't go away. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, I'm Wong Xiaoning with Roshan Kunnison from the depths of Petaling Jaya. And of course, this is The Morning Run. And that song was by the one and only Blondie, rock icon, and the name of the title was Sunday Girl. Now, we're taking a look at newspapers this morning. And what do you have in front of you, Roshan?
Well, I've got Malaysia Kini, Malaysia Insight, and Malay Mail, as well as the CEO Morning Brief. But let's start with The Morning Brief, shall we? Because just following up on what we talked about earlier, the CEO Morning Brief's front page is stock surge to all-time highs on vaccine optimism. Basically, stocks are getting very excited, some of them anyway, more than others. And that's on the front page of The Morning Brief. But if we go deeper into the pages here, they've got some commentary over whether it'll be a gridlocked budget. So basically, in case you hadn't heard, the budget is currently or will be debated over the week. And there are lots of, let's just say, hot certain points that are not exactly acceptable to all parties here. So how this turns out, whether the budget gets passed, these are all things that we're going to be eagerly watching over the next few weeks. Beyond that, also, I think, Xiaoning, something you mentioned earlier, Kosan Rubber's net profit surged with revenue exceeding over 1 billion ringgit.
So, just a quarter,
again,
right?
Some players in the pandemic. Yeah, just for the quarter. oh, man. Yeah, so this is, you know, the players that have done better during the pandemic. On the flip side, we've also got some news out of Petronas saying that the extra 10 billion dividend payment to the government is affordable. So those are some of the first few pages from the CEO Morning Brief. But, you know, Shani, I didn't know this, but apparently now there's a bit of news that you need to has come up that if you're filling petrol at the petrol station, you need to scan your MySejahtera app, apparently.
Yes.
And a lot of times the QR code is in the
convenience store, right?
So you've got to go and do that, apparently. And this is quite interesting because Malay Mail is covering this. It originally came out from Sin Chew Daily. And it looks like some of the operators on the National Security Council telephone hotline contradicted each other on this point. Again, going to the confusion that's going about when it comes to SOPs, but apparently it'll be addressed at today's, the contradiction between the two operators will be addressed today.
So we will find out from Dato' Sri Ismail Sabri, what is the clarity, I mean, get some clarity in terms of this. Yeah, when it came out, I was a little bit confused because I confess I was like, I didn't know about this and I don't see the QR codes everywhere, but you're right, it's available in the convenience store or outside the convenience store. But, you know, we will let you know throughout the day if there's any news on this. Meanwhile, I've got the Malaysian Reserve in front of me, and this is a point that you brought up, Roshan, about the fact that the budget is not a certain thing, because the headline here is Anwar, support for budget 2021, not unconditional, because there are various issues surrounding the government's financial plans. So Dato' Sri Anwar said that we were told to support the budget under the assumption that it is a COVID-19 budget. Therefore, in my opinion, we will only do so if that is the case. So like you say, I think it's going to be a little bit of friction or debate in Parliament. And I think we will definitely be covering this story throughout the week. But I think I also want to bring up a point, which is the fact that we, you know, our COVID-19 cases are still very high in Malaysia. So yesterday, it was 972. And unfortunately, there were 8 deaths. But the point is, and this is something our health DG emphasised, flatten the curve and we'll shorten CMCO. So the point is to always remember you have to practice those SOPs. Do not take it for granted. And he has basically asked everyone to doodle di rumah for 2 weeks. That makes a difference.
Yeah, I think he said basically if you want to break the chain, right? And it's all about it's all about breaking that community transmission. And I really like the way Singapore has branded their version of CMCO, right? Circuit breaker.
Yeah.
Essentially, if it gets too high, it gets too hot, you try your best to break the community transmission. That's where the concern is, because that can go unchecked and become a very serious issue. And not to say that 1,000 cases now isn't a serious issue, but it could get worse. And yes, as you said, Tansri, Dr. Noor Hisham has basically said, if everyone can stay home for 2 weeks, we stand a better chance at breaking the infection chain.
Yeah, and then there's one more piece of news coming out from the New Straits Times, which we have covered yesterday. And it's all about the concern that schools have basically closed until January 20th next year. So, you know, there is the concern over the scrapping of physical classes. Then this question about the unstable net connection among home-based learning challenges. And I think this is also quoting Mazli Malik, who was the previous education minister under the previous administration. He asked, what about the 40% students who can't do online learning? And yeah, I am very concerned about this. There are many repercussions. And I also wonder what impact it has in terms of a whole generation of students who were held back for a year, if not longer, and didn't have access to education. Because education is that great equalizer, right? It is that move towards social mobility. And I'm sure also on a very, social level, kids probably miss their friends tremendously. What are you going to do? Even my nephew is jumping around the house and, how do you control him? And how do you explain to a 7-year-old you can't go to school and meet your friends? So difficult times ahead for parents and for kids. But that's all the news we have from the papers this morning. Coming up next is the 7 a.m. news bulletin, followed by more business news and analysis, where we'll be speaking to Joe Quinnan about where global markets are heading. But first, here's the song This Time Tomorrow by The Kings. Keep it here, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.